This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Store's beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy six Celsius, Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1 liter flavors and get the seventh free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got the drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy six and get the seventh free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Mully and Haw Flashback.
What's the best thing about being in the tournament? What do you like most about it?
You know, you're talking to an old school guy who I love Selection Sunday. Mm-hmm. I love the music that they play on CBS. You know it's basketball. It makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That was Brad Underwood, the Illinois coach. We spoke to him this morning. I so agree with him. I love the music. I love the various NCAA songs over the years. They always make me think about the tournament.
One shining moment.
Yes.
That's always the thing at the end of the tournament. You hear that music and it says March Madness. And I thought CBS did a terrific job in paying tribute to Greg Gumbel at the beginning of the show yesterday, because it is different. You become so accustomed to so many different traditions and rituals with this tournament, whatever they may be. But the staple was always Greg Gumbel was there to preside over whatever was happening on Selection Sunday. And you missed him yesterday, and he will be missed throughout the month of March. And they really did a nice job in paying tribute to him. So this begins one of the busier weeks. It's so much fun. You got the first four playing tomorrow, and then we're off. And so we've got opening day tomorrow here with the Cubs and the Dodgers. And so you have to divided interests and all over the place, but it's so much fun.
Yeah, no, it works out very well because you got, obviously, the Cubs. They've got the international opening day, if you will. So we've got that. Tomorrow we're going to have a crowd of people here. There'll be a lot of energy. And then Wednesday you've got that. And then you've got the NIT and you got the NCAAs. And, you know, some of us are fascinated with the NIT and we'll be watching that with great interest. Because the schools we attended are...
Don't know how much interest I'm having in the NIT, not going to lie.
No, you won't have any, but I will.
Loyola's in the NIT.
That's what I'm trying to say.
The more basketball you can play, if you're a basketball program, the better. I don't think that it's...
Be nice if they
want to get it. It's bad that they're saying yes to the NIT. It's great, because that's what you do. I just think there's only so much you can pay attention to.
They're out west.
There's so many hours in the day. Who do they play?
They're at San Jose State. Is that right, Justin?
That's correct. Yes.
That's going to be a late tip.
That's going to be like at 10 o'clock.
I think it's a tenner. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
PM?
Yeah.
I'll be here, but I won't be of any value to you whatsoever.
So you're going to stay up and watch Loyola on Tuesday night?
I don't need to imply value.
Tuesday night, 10 o'clock, you're going to watch Loyola?
Go Ramblers!
Yeah.
Okay.
There is very little chance.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But I will be checking the score when I wake up.
I feel like we have to watch Xavier in Texas, which is an 8:10 tip, because the winner of that, of course,
you
gets
do.
The Illini.
Yeah, we got to come in here Yeah, we got to come in here Thursday morning ready
week.
To go.
We've got to just that decide that we're not going to sleep.
Yeah.
And we make this commitment to each other, and then we generally will collapse as the week goes on.
That's pretty much a decision you make when you decide to do the show.
Piper down. Sleep. Someone will fall, and we'll just keep going.
What is the sleep you speak of?
And then the first game Thursday is Creighton-Louisville, which is actually a really good
Creighton
game.
Creighton who?
Creighton-Louisville.
What did you think he said?
Louisville.
Okay. So you were
no, I said Louisville.
Did you want to pronounce that slightly
It's not Louis.
Are you from one of these SEC Louisville. Cities now?
It's Louisville.
Okay.
And what do you pronounce, David? How do you
I don't
say
think
it?
It's that much different. But
yeah, it is.
It sounds a little bit more different than when you say it. Louisville.
Oh, you say Louisville.
There's no Louis. It's no. Louisville.
Louisville.
Louisville. He's
been to the Kentucky Derby?
Yeah.
I don't remember what you're talking about.
Have you ever been to the Kentucky Derby?
Oh, no.
Okay, well, that's why you don't know how to properly pronounce it.
Oh, well, then you have no idea. You understand nothing.
I've been to Louisville, though.
About horse racing.
I've been to Louisville.
What did you do in Louisville?
Actually, had a nice weekend.
I've never heard of it. Where is that?
It's in Kentucky.
Ah.
What about Nawlins?
Just south of Jeffersonville, Indiana. Okay, I'm from Indiana. I've been to Louisville. I've been well familiar with the place.
Hey, he's an Indiana boy.
Yes.
He is. Did you happen to see that a young gentleman from Elburn, Illinois, won the Los Angeles Marathon yesterday? How about that? The guy was a cross-country runner from Montana State, from Elburn, Illinois.
Really?
And he won. I mean, why isn't that guy in the Chicago Marathon? Let's get him here.
Why isn't that guy on our show?
Marathon of Champions.
Let's book him. Where did you see this? Where did you stumble across this?
I'm following many things at once, okay. Mr. David.
We'll check in with our guy, Perry Pinkowski. He might have a hookup for us.
Yes, I bet he knows. I bet he's aware of
Matt
this.
Matt Richtman?
Thank you. Matt Richtman.
Okay.
David pronounced it correctly.
Maybe I did.
He's
Maybe I
close
didn't.
To Elburn.
Well, okay, that's...
Elburn's on the last stop of the train that I would take coming from the city.
He's Chicago guy made good.
Montana State cross-country team. All-American as a junior.
I believe I said Montana State.
Well, great. Did you book him yet?
He won the Minnesota marathon, and this is his second ever marathon. And he didn't win in Minnesota, but this is his second ever marathon. And he won in L.A.
Got a lot of time for marathoners. It's a great thing. A lot of respect for marathoners.
You did that thing, right? You sat in the pace car?
He rode in the car. That was one of the more cool things I've done, is being in the lead car for the Chicago Marathon, sitting next to Gabe Ramirez, another big marathon guy. Gabe's a big marathoner.
Has Gabe ever run a marathon?
No.
And you haven't either?
No. No, definitely.
But you were toying with it.
I've ridden in a marathon.
You've ridden in a marathon. I've never taken part in a horse race, neither as driver nor horse, but I did ride in the pace car at one of the local racetracks. That was super cool.
Well, we'll have to book this young man. It'll be a pretty good story.
Yeah,
There's a lot of other big stories this week, though, Molly. Maybe next week.
As long as we're mentioning all the cool things that happened.
This week.
An Irishman winning the Rory McIlroy. The U.S. Open, on St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, baby!
That's Mike Bray.
That's Mike Bray.
Atlantic Hawks assistant coach when Notre Dame won on St. Patrick's Day. Back when Notre Dame was winning on St. Patrick's Day and when they were in the NCAA tournament. Not the women's program. Women's program riding high. Men's program, not so much.
Mm-hmm. Didn't they bring in? That guy was at Penn State and did a very good
job. Micah Shrewsbury?
I thought he'd do okay. Is it just going to take a little time?
Maybe. It might take a little more time. If he would stop yelling at people at press conferences, it might take less time.
Oh, boy.
But he's going to
Coaching department is a big, big story on this station. I'm just saying.
What does that mean?
On our show.
What does that mean?
We want people to behave. We don't like anyone, Hurley.
I don't like Dan Hurley.
Why not?
You know, I did find myself, I was a little bit harsh this morning going through the brackets. I pointed out some coaches that I don't care for that much.
A lot of them. It made me feel like you are the man that likes to get coaches fired.
No, that's not.
How it felt.
How can you say that?
Because you don't like any of them.
My bracket is an ode to sentimentality. This is something that you could have had in 2009, 1999. I've got Izzo and Pitino in the Final Four. What is more sentimental and coach-friendly than that?
Well,
I correct you, sir.
Well, you can correct me all you want, but
I said things that are fair comments and criticism of Danny Hurley, the biggest whiner in college basketball.
Oh, now you've
gone just asinine.
You've gone too far.
He is.
He's going for a three-peat.
Okay, but he's a whiner.
He's got Pat Riley in his corner.
He's a whiner.
Riley wants to cash on that at some point.
What other coach did I disparage? I don't think that I disparaged another coach besides Danny Hurley, did I?
I think you say you didn't like the Auburn coach, too. Yes.
Oh, I don't like Bruce Pearl. That's right.
A disliked member of your coaching fraternity for quite some time.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to watch Bruce Pearl's team advance in the tournament to the Final Four any more than I would want to buy a used car off of him. No, thank you.
I didn't even know.
Not a Bruce Pearl fan.
Carlot.
These aren't exactly hot takes. There's a lot of guys that don't like Bruce Pearl.
A lot of Illini.
Let's talk about the coaches
like
I do respect in this tournament.
Rick Pitino. A lot to love about his career.
The sixth NCAA tournament.
Would you want to be an assistant coach to him? That's what you got to ask yourself.
Well, I think because you're going to get to the NCAA tournament.
Okay.
You're going to get whatever bonus kicks in. Tom Izzo. How do you not like Izzo? How could anybody? It's un-American not to like Izzo. Izzo is the epitome of a college basketball coach, isn't he?
Mooch is apparently down on him.
Why?
They had a schism.
Did they?
I've totally made that up. Okay. No, they're like best buddies.
I'd say they're best buddies.
They grew up in the Upper Peninsula.
They did.
I know.
Iron Mountain.
Thank you.
Iron Mountain, Michigan, I believe it was. They were on the same football team. I think they were on the same high school football team. And the tournament is about coaches. Coaches you trust, coaches you like. Ben McCollum from Drake. I think he gives them a chance to beat Mizzou. Now that I said that, Big Z's going to be texting me. But I think Drake is going to beat Missouri. And Ben McCollum will be a big reason why.
Yeah, whatever.
Oh, jeez. He's already calling in. I've already heard from Big Z this morning. I know you'd be surprised.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
About the Mizzou comment?
No, Wayne in a Bedard.
Ooh. Oh, really?
Oh, God, yeah.
I bet he's very pro-Bedard.
Yes, you think?
No.
I keep it real.
He agree with your son that he's broken?
Oh, he definitely.
Or beyond broken.
Big Z will probably go a step further than that. But I won't speak for him. He didn't, want that necessarily be open discussion necessarily. But he does have opinions on Bedard. He's got a lot of hockey opinions. Everybody should have hockey opinions about Bedard in Chicago because what's going on with him is too much. But
yeah,
we digress.
It's been depressing.
Back to the tournament. I thought Mike DeCourcy was really strong in stating why North Carolina's inclusion was so offensive to so many people.
Yeah.
And I think that it's understandable why the committee, led by the athletic director...
From North Carolina.
Yes. This is such a blind spot, it seems, that the way Mike explained it, and he's not an irrational hot take artist.
No.
That it's almost like bugs you even more. Like rational people were so offended because this was such an obvious, should have been an obvious exclusion from the tournament.
It should never have even been a consideration, frankly. They were eliminated from the field, in my opinion. And then they somehow make the tournament, even if it is a play-in game.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other element of it is that the guy, it doesn't matter if he left the room when they discussed it, he is the athletic director of that school.
Right.
So, they're all throwing their butt a bone. Everyone knows it. And frankly, there were other teams that deserved to be in ahead of them, including, among others, Indiana, West Virginia, and BYU.
That's exactly right. And I wonder... You asked a good question during the break about Indiana. People wonder about Indiana's viability in this tournament field. And I wonder what role subconsciously it's inevitable that you can't factor it in. But Mike Woodson is gone.
Yeah.
They're replacing their coach. They don't have any continuity. They're kind of they ended on a poor note in the Big Ten tournament, and they didn't look like a team that belonged in the field. And yet their overall numbers, you could justify including them. Not instead of West Virginia, but maybe in addition to. But I think that the teams that are getting rid of their head coach, does that limit their reach?
In. Yeah, it probably does. It also makes you wonder if when you start talking about kind of conferences and if you're including so many from one conference, you want to even it up a little bit. We talked about the Big East felt slighted a year ago. They only had three teams in. Now they have five teams in, a very down year for the Big East, but they get five teams. The Big Ten with eight teams doesn't seem like it is what they anticipated going in. And I feel the Big Ten was really had a weird year because they were all very competitive, but there wasn't kind of the top-ranked teams all year like there were in the SEC.
That's true. And the prediction by Brad Underwood about a month ago when he was on our program that there would be double-digit teams in the Big Ten, at the time we scoffed and we're like, eh. But really, legitimately, in his mind, and I can see why Big Ten proponents would believe this, Indiana and Ohio State had claims. They could have staked claim to say we belong, and they have reason to believe as they watched the Selection Sunday field be unveiled that they were as good as some of the other teams that got at large bids. I don't believe Ohio State has as good of an argument as Indiana, and neither one of them had as good of an argument as West Virginia.
But I think that ultimately the selection committee, the only argument they have is to make the same one that you make about your Final Four. Oh, it's nostalgia. Oh, this could have been 2019 or 2019. This could have been 1976. Like, why are you operating with nostalgia?
Is that my voice? Why am I? Because I can't get...
The selection committee.
Yeah, the selection committee has an obligation to remove emotion from the equation. I have no such obligation.
No, but they are not supposed to be thinking of, oh, you remember that one time when Michael Jordan played with Sam Perkins and James Worthy and they were all together?
Wasn't that cool?
Remember Dean Smith? He was nice to me once. Give me a break, sir.
Jordan, Perkins, and Worthy.
I worked at a paint factory at one point on the South Side when that team was making hay, and one of the guys said that he loved that team so much because the names were so Southern. Michael Jordan, Sam Perkins, James Worthy.
They are really.
I laugh so hard at that.
They were.
And that
they
goes
are.
Through my head all the time. Yeah. Those are very Southern names.
Okay, so you got those three.
Like almost biblical
names. All right, so let's remember. So you got Jimmy Black's point guard, Michael Jordan, Perkins, Worthy, who was the fifth starter. Do you remember the fifth starter?
Buzz Peterson.
You should, of all days, you should remember this. You should remember.
Spencer Haywood.
No, come on. Fifth starter on the Carolina team.
I'm just thinking of old Carolina.
Matt
players.
Doherty.
Oh, it was Matt Doherty. Okay.
Matt Doherty.
Yeah.
The Notre Dame coach, him. SMU coach. Yes.
He was briefly then the
North Carolina coach. Yeah, ever
he
so briefly.
Didn't do enough.
No, he did not. Left Notre Dame after one tearful season.
To take the North Carolina
yes,
job.
Yes, he did. Caught lightning in a bottle in South Bend, and then he bolted.
Well, Buzz Peterson was Michael's roommate.
But he wasn't. I think he was a bench guy, right?
Yeah. No, but I mean, there was a finals game where Jordan hit all those threes, the shrug game. You remember that?
Yeah.
And he said that he and Buzz had been playing a game of horse that day, just goofing around, and he couldn't miss a shot. So that was kind of, he had all these old feelings and everything, and he got into a championship game.
He's
shots.
A name from blast from the past. That's a good name. But I did not factor in nostalgia or my dislike of certain coaches in every aspect of my bracket when I filled it out. Because if that were the case, I don't think I would have had Kelvin Sampson advancing to the Elite Eight with Houston. They're going to play, I have, according to my bracket, Tennessee and get beat. But I have them beating Purdue and... not a huge Kelvin Sampson fan, but I think that's I'm not have the same sort of vitriol for some other coaches.
Michael Jordan and Sam Perkins. And
they're not in this tournament.
And Matt Doherty. No wonder I didn't remember. That was not.
It wasn't Matt Doherty.
That's not a caramelized
Matt
name.
Matt Doherty's from Long Island.
That's my
He's an
point.
Irish Catholic kid from Long Island.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, it so doesn't roll off the tongue.
You're like, you should remember that name. How am I supposed to remember
that was
that
one of the greatest
name?
Starting fives in college basketball history.
Well, I mean, Worthy, Perkins, and Jordan were.
And he was part of it. Good old Jimmy Black,
like,
too.
That's the old Jimmy Black. Steve Kerr line. You know, Michael and I scored 50.
I know, but...
I had a bucket.
Do you remember Jimmy Black, how good he was as a point guard?
He was a good player, but he wasn't... I don't remember his NBA career.
Not everything. That's a mistake you're making. Not every college basketball career is defined... how good it is based on their NBA success or failure. Well, it's college basketball.
Now, every basketball career can be so defined. I think it's important if you start talking about a guy and you remember, oh, he won a title in college and then he did this in the NBA, you're like, oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that. That was great.
Yeah, but I think that when I think of March Madness, and I think we've been through this before because we watch it totally differently. I don't think about NBA anything this month.
See,
I don't think about who's going to be the first pick. How good was Derek Wittenberg as an NBA player?
I believe Fred Mitchell went to Wittenberg.
Derek Wittenberg. How good was he as an NBA player? Probably not very good. Derek Wittenberg is one of the more legendary figures in March Madness history because of what he did with North Carolina State in 1983.
Yeah, I think that if we can remember the talk
about NBA
to Mike DeCourcy earlier in the program, how you have to have an NBA player on your roster to be a team that's going to be successful in the tournament. You need to have an NBA guy.
Since 1987, no team has won since Indiana did without a first-round draft pick. Fair enough, but I don't want to project that quickly. That's all. His own.
Then you're bragging about picking your bracket, this healthy, nostalgic bracket.
I have bragged about nothing.
Doesn't have an NBA player on
it. I have bragged about nothing. I'm just sharing my bracket. I'm not bragging.
I have all the Wittenberg family.
We got Coombe next.
We're bringing Ron Coomer next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio. 6-7 to score. The names were so Southern. Michael Jordan, Sam Perkins, yes, James Worthy.
What is Daxer you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
Ron Coomer on deck.
And Ronnie's been red hot. He's been in his zone.
Ron Coomer.
Let's see if the Cubs can respond.
We're helping him out.
Coomer drives one into right center field. Long run, Pierre. Pierre dives, misses it. It bounces all the way to the wall.
That's a nice knock for the old hometown boy, isn't it?
Chicago Cubs radio analyst.
What a ball game. The wait is over. Right? It is over. The Cubs are World Series champions. How does that sound, partner?
1999 American League All-Star.
From the American League All-Stars. Infielder Ron Coomer.
The Coombe Dog with Mully and Haw.
Woo-hoo!
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always delightful to talk to the great Ron Coomer. And he joins us in studio this morning. Good morning, Ron. How are you holding up?
I am doing. Holding up's a good way of putting it after a St. Patrick's Day weekend.
Wow.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to you guys.
You're
very
too.
Festive. I walked in and I felt very underdressed. I'm out of green clothes. Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
It was a long weekend, Coombs. It's a long weekend.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was one of those.
A lot
weekends.
Of wardrobe changes, I'm sure.
Yep. A lot of bagpipers playing this weekend at the restaurant, and we had a great time. But yeah, I'm out of Green Close.
Business
so I apologize.
Is booming, I bet.
As a Scottish Irish kid, I feel very underdressed today.
Big weekend in Lockport, right?
Lockport was booming this weekend, yeah, and we were a part of it. So, yeah, I think Lockport is very much ready to have St. Patrick's Day take the next step and wait till next year.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I haven't really participated in a good St. Patrick's Day festival in a while. It's just been I think it's these hours that get you. And you will know that tomorrow. You'll be working our hours. You'll be on tomorrow at 4:30.
4:30 tomorrow, Zach and I will be on with the pregame show, and then the first pitch will be, I believe, 5:05, if I'm not, I think that's right, and we were talking at the break, you know, before we went on, what's open that early? I mean, we grew up in Dunkin' Donuts is there. Yeah. You had these good little mom and pop restaurants.
Right.
I guess we bring our own coffee
well, you
from
know what,
the house.
Though, we are not worried about that because Manny's Deli, special thanks to Manny's Deli. They're catering our watch party during tomorrow's season opener in Tokyo. Go to mannysdeli.com. Visit them on the corner of Roosevelt and Jefferson. Manny's Deli has been Chicago's authentic deli since 1942. 77 years of delicious, and we're going to experience it all tomorrow morning.
Very, very nice. See, that's when you know you've really, it's big.
You've arrived.
It's big, you know. You're going on first thing, the sun's not up, and you've got Manny's coming out to take care of you guys.
Gotta love it.
Yep.
Not going to lie. I'm looking forward to that.
I agree.
You know, that's going to help us wake up quicker.
Absolutely. I
love a good corned beef for breakfast.
You love a good corned beef at any time. You're
there
like,
you go.
How can we go wrong with that?
That's right.
So, come the baseball part of the weekend, watching the Cubs in Tokyo, at some point yesterday or maybe it was Saturday, it had an intensity that you don't typically experience in March for spring training games. It had an intensity and a buzz from the fans and the noise and all of the things. It seemed like the Cubs were taking this a little bit more seriously than your typical spring training game.
Yeah, I would agree. I do believe the whole environment has to do with it. When you go to another country and you're playing, and this is a big deal for Major League Baseball, and you're playing another country's teams, the competitive juices start coming out in you. And the other thing, too, is the Cubs have some young guys that are still trying to make a team.
Right.
You know,
right.
And they're right in the mix of all of this stuff happening on the field. So Counts was putting them out there to play, you know. And Sean Workman and Pete Carr-Armstrong, all these young guys are, you know, it's, most of them have made
unproven
the team.
Unproven guys, though.
Yeah, they're young, and it's fun to watch. And I was really glad to see all of them kind of pitch in and help things go along. But Japanese baseball, their country loves baseball. They're into it. And, you know, it's very choreographed in the stands, which is kind of unique and cool. Reminds me a little bit of winter ball, but cool. And I loved it. And, you know, it's great for everybody being down there.
So we were discussing this idea. I think this is a great idea. I think that there is an element of Ohtani being the central figure in all of this, and the idolatry, let's use the word, that he is treated with in Japan is something to behold. I like the idea of just putting a guy on base and not pitching to him, and just ruining Major League Baseball's party by playing baseball in a way that limits runs and prevents him from being the star of the game. What do you think? Is that a foul idea? Would MLB be upset with me for suggesting it? Wouldn't it be really funny if that's what they ended up doing?
Dustin's phone's ringing right now.
Oh, Dustin loves the idea.
Well, he just, his whole idea is for us to win. I get that, and that's a... But, yeah, you would oh, my goodness. You would never be invited to Japan. I can promise you that. Sure, Mikey. It's one of those things. But I watched it. I watched that very thing happen in New York when Barry Bonds came to New York to play us in you know, against the Yankees, and we just said we weren't pitching to him. Good luck. Someone else beat us. But he's that kind of talent, right?
He's that
kind of player. So at the end of the day, you're trying to win ball games. These games count. And, you know, I would definitely say in the pitchers' meetings, let anyone else
beat us but him.
Right.
And now Betts is not playing in the series. So
because of the illness. Yeah, and right. That's understandable, and I think it's really going to be a topic all season long perhaps. But the thing with Ohtani, not unlike Barry Bonds, but you put him on first, he could steal second.
And third, right.
And he's going to be a threat on the bases. So what you're doing is that you're making it much more difficult for everything else in that inning, in that game, by putting a runner on who's going to create havoc on the base paths. If he couldn't run, it'd be a much easier decision.
Yeah, it's a roll of the dice, there's no doubt. And you're really, you know, how hot are the guys hitting behind him? Without Betts playing, that's definitely, you know, plays in the favor of putting him on base. But, you would have a hard time getting out of Japan with that.
So, you have an international incident. Amid all this pomp and circumstance and everything going on away from maybe just the fundamentals of what we're watching on a daily basis with the Cubs, help me understand what's going on with Matt Shaw's batting stance. Because it's as unorthodox as I think I've seen in a while, with the toe pointed back toward the catcher, and he's got the little rhythmic, you know, bat. He's it's not what you typically see from a guy who's had success hitting at every single level.
Well, Craig Counsell described it perfectly before I ever got to spring training. I was listening to Counsell's, one of his interviews, and they were talking to him, and he said he does a lot of things unorthodoxly, if that's even a word, but they work for him, right? So, and in the batting stance, most guys hit with an open stance these days. He hits with a closed stance, a lot of the 70s. And then with the closed stance, the biggest thing that all hitting coaches and hitters like myself have been taught is to keep your front side closed. So that's a trigger, I'm sure, for him with the front foot to pigeon-toe the front foot. That keeps you closed. The leg kick is unique also because it kind of hovers. We don't see a lot of that. The great thing about that part, and we've seen guys in our town do that. Harold Baines had the high leg kick low, slow, you know, up and slow. He does it early, which is what you have to do. It kind of hangs there, and then he gets his foot down before he commits to the baseball. So when you look at that swing mechanically and what's going on, it's all good.
Right.
So those are good things that he's doing. They're just a little different than the norm right now.
And it seems to be working for him so far. But I just wonder if it's sustainable because you'd see it so infrequently. So, okay, fine. If he's going to hit, he's going to play. They want him to play third base. Interesting lineup decision yesterday. Not going to see Nico Hoerner until domestic opening day. Right. Gage Workman at second base. You like that idea?
I think he has shown in spring that he can handle the middle infield. I did not know that, and I was sitting in my booth just watching a ball game, and he moved from third base as he came in the fifth to second base, and I went, that's the biggest second baseman we've had in a while. You know, I mean, he's a big kid.
He's a big guy.
6'3", 225 maybe, and he moved over to second. Now, this is a kid that stole 30 bases last year in Double-A, so he can run.
Right.
And he goes and turns the pivot at second on a tough pivot, and it was bang, bang, pivot, double play, and I went, oh, now he can hit. He can hit for power from the left side. And, oh, by the way, he can turn the pivot at second base. And that changes the program to me for a guy that's going to be a utility player that can play the middle of the diamond in the infield. And, oh, by the way, he's got big-time juice in his bat. That's a big bonus.
How do you anticipate the pitching? And I understand there are limits. I mean, this is such a weird game because you break camp. You go to play two games that matter in the standings, and then you come back to camp, which is a very odd reality. I don't know who's prepared to go more than three innings. Three innings seems like that would be the max for anyone. Am I wrong about that? Would it be four or five? Would you try to pitch someone for six innings if they've got it going? How do you handle just because of the time of year?
I think the strategy that the Cubs put together going into camp where guys were getting work early and building up to this moment, knowing that this was going to be the case, especially for Shota and Steele, those guys had been prepared. So I think, you know, for them to say for sure five, they could, you know, that 80 to 90 pitches, maybe even 100, I think that would be okay. Wow. A lot of it's going to be stress related, though, how the game goes. Right. I really believe that. But I've watched them pitch in spring, and they've done a very good job early of building these guys up to be ready.
What role would you have Ben Brown play on your pitching staff?
Wow, that's a great question. That's a good question, and I'm really not sure.
I don't think they are either.
I would agree to that, David. My question would be with him, if he's not in the rotation, mm-hmm. which right now it's looking like he might not be.
Right.
But I'm not sure of that because I haven't had a chance to talk to counts in, you know, probably a week now. And you know how things can change at this time of the year in 1 week. To me, he's one of those talented kids with the arm that he has. We've got to make sure he's 100% healthy, ready to go. There's no issues. His arm is built up because he's one of those kids that can pitch for you for a long time and be in your rotation. So he would be the one guy that I would say, let's make sure that the situation's right for him. But I would have no problem putting him in the bullpen if you felt good about that and pitching him. I really would.
I think you just want him to avoid Iowa. At least I do.
Yeah.
I don't want him to start the season if you need him and every game counts, pitching for your AAA affiliate so he can get stretched out or whatever. I think he can help you win games in the major league level.
And so you got him in the back end of the bullpen.
Or I have him as my fifth starter till Assad gets ready, and then you figure it out.
Well, here's the issue with the way the schedule will – the fifth starter
you won't need one for a while.
Yeah, for the first couple weeks, usually is kind of not.
But I would use him in ways that
I agree with.
Keep
you.
Him
I'm
sharp, and I don't want him being away from my major league pitching staff because I think you're better with him.
Couldn't agree more. There's no way you could make a case that the Cubs, now they may make a decision that they want him to do something in Iowa. That's all fine, mm-hmm. but you can't make a case that that arm is not making you better. He is that kind of talent as a kid.
What is the hardest cut to come? Do you feel like they've got a really difficult decision they're going to have to make here, or do you feel like it's the team will cut itself?
I believe the hardest decision will be the Workman decision, whether he stays with the club
or goes back to Detroit.
Or goes back to Detroit as a Rule 5. I asked tough. This question in spring training. I know I probably shouldn't say this on the air, but you know who's listening to us with me on right now, right? You got a couple million people listening right now.
Between us.
Yeah, between us. How did Detroit let that kid go?
I know.
Yeah, that's crazy.
They're not God. That good.
No. Nobody is.
No. He's been phenomenal.
Did A.J. Hinch know?
He's a 30 stolen base guy in Double A that can play the middle infield with 30 home run power.
From the left-hand
left side
of the plate.
Yeah. And you look at him and you go, he's like, there's baseball body right there. Bang, there it is. I asked that question to the scouts all spring.
He's a workman in progress.
He's workmanlike.
See, St. Patrick's stay top of his game today.
All right, Coom, so bottom line. This is the last time we'll probably be on the air before the Cubs tip it off for real in 2025. How many victories is this team capable of winning this year?
Well, I would say Craig Counsell said the team needs to be prepared to win 90 games to be a playoff team.
Mm-hmm. 90 or bust.
There's your number.
Yeah.
They're good enough to win 90? As currently constructed?
I think currently constructed, yes, if they stay healthy, and that's the big question mark for every team.
I agree with you. That's a standard they set. They should be able to meet it.
Our division is not at the top. It's down a little bit. We all know that. So,
yeah.
You know, so it gives you a chance. Yep.
Great stuff. Ron, thank you so much.
Great to see you, Coom.
We look forward to hearing you in the morning, and we'll be listening with our audience throughout
the day. You guys enjoy Manny's. We'll be coffeeing it in the booth, and you guys enjoy it. I love the Expos hat with the Ireland
shake. Thank you, buddy. I'm trying to capture
it's a French-Canadian St. Patrick's Day.
It is.
That's
it's
right.
Top of his game
always.
Today, I tell you. It's
thank
unbelievable.
Look at Ron. Thank you, buddy. Mully and Haw, we've got our colleagues next on 670 The Score.